Mike Dempsey. Look, I hear from people all the time who are having tax problems, but don't be afraid of the IRS. Right now, you can talk or meet with local professionals that are here to help your specific tax issues. Accelerate your tax solution with Accelerated Tax Solutions.
The sports world keeps spinning, and the local conversation continues. Now, Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
And a very good Monday evening to you, Jacksonville, back in the city of Jacksonville. Glad you're with us, Hacker After Dark on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Got back from Canton, Ohio last night. It was an eventful travel day, as I'm sure you've heard some of the stories on some of the previous programs. I will tell you this, and I'm not the biggest traveler. I know many of you out there listening here to Hacker After Dark travel a heck of a lot more than I do. I had always heard that Atlanta was the biggest beast of an airport, and it is. Don't get me wrong. It is a gigantic building. I've had many issues in Atlanta. But that Charlotte airport last night, when we get dropped off on E terminal and we have 15 minutes to get to the B terminal, we got dropped off in the Eric terminal. We had to get to the Bobby terminal.
A little pep in your step.
In 15 minutes, Denmark. I was huffing and I was puffing by the end of that situation.
Wait, what did you do? Had Urban Meyer hands on knees when you got there?
Well, I mean, I had the rolling suitcase. I had the heavy backpack. It was a situation is what it was. The moving walkways were not moving last night at the Charlotte International Airport. So I got very little support in that regard. But I have a new healthy respect for Charlotte, North Carolina. And it has made the list with Atlanta and with LaGuardia as airports that I respect completely. Because it is a beast to get from point A to point B. Or in my case last night, from Terminal E to Terminal B. But glad to be back with you here in the city of Jacksonville. We got a lot to do. It's a brand new week on Hacker After Dark, and we are glad you are with us. Coming up in hour number one, Mia O'Brien of XL Primetime. We'll get her on in about a half an hour or so. I want to wrap up the Canton trip with Mia, the Baselli speech. If you have not checked out the video that was put out on the 1010XL Twitter feed, on 1010XL Facebook, 1010XL YouTube, last night, just wrapping up the weekend's festivities, you need to take 3 minutes of your time tonight or tomorrow morning and check that out. Mia, Graham, they did a terrific job with that video. So we'll wrap up the Canton trip with Mia O'Brien, talk about Jaguar practice today. That's coming up about 8:35, at 9 o'clock, or 9:15 rather. 9:15 tonight, Graham Hall over in Gainesville. You know, you can kind of forget, we've been so wrapped up in Tony Baselli, right? And so wrapped up in the Jaguars and training camp. You look on that calendar, we're 19 days away from the first Saturday in college football. Inside of 3 weeks until Florida State plays, Vanderbilt and Hawaii, Northwestern, and I think Nebraska on opening weekend, 19 days away, 26 days away from Labor Day weekend, where Utah will come in to play the Florida Gators. And we'll talk Gator football with Graham Hall of 24/7 Sports coming up at 9:15. And finally, at the bottom of the 9 o'clock hour, Lauren Brooks. You get her every day on the Frangie Show. You get her Tuesdays on Helmets and Heels. Really enjoyed the trip to Canton with everybody. Talking to Lauren about the Jaguars, about the Gators. I said, hey, why don't we actually do this on the radio? So Lauren Brooks will make her Hacker After Dark debut coming up at the bottom of the 9 o'clock hour. But as we do every night on Hacker After Dark, we kick it off with a big deal of the night. Dylan Denmark, let's do that right now.
Time now for the big deal of the night.
What's the big deal?
What is the big deal?
No big deal.
It is a big deal.
On Hacker After Dark.
It is a big deal. Practice has begun again for the Jacksonville Jaguars following the Hall of Fame game in Canton. That wheel keeps turning, right? We stayed in Canton 3 extra days, Friday, Saturday, came back on Sunday for Tony Baselli's enshrinement. Well, guess what? the Cleveland Browns, they get on an airplane in less than 72 hours, and they will travel here to Jacksonville. Their first preseason game, Jacksonville's second preseason game. So the Jaguars preparing for Cleveland for preseason game number two. By the way, the NFL as a whole kicks off Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You have some sort of NFL preseason football as all 32 teams will be in action. The Jaguars come off a 27-11 loss to the Raiders, a game where 21 players did not play for Jacksonville, including stars like Trevor Lawrence, Christian Kirk, Travis Etienne, Josh Allen, just to name a few. But back at practice, it began yesterday when we were up in Ohio. We're looking at reports from our media brethren that were out there at camp, and apparently they got after it yesterday. I heard Mark Long, the AP, my friend Mark Long, John Shipley of Jaguar Report, who we have on here, talk about it being the most physical training camp practice they have seen in a long time. They really, really were doing some thumping yesterday at Jaguar camp. And my question to myself when I was reading this is, well, I wonder if that has anything to do with what happened in Canton on Thursday night, or if this was pre-planned. Regardless of what happened in Canton, the Sunday after the Hall of Fame game, they were going to get after it. They were going to bust heads. And I think in talking to some people, it was probably planned. Coaches like Doug Peterson have these things planned to the minute and to the hour. So certainly every day is planned of camp. But how about that? Travis Etienne took a couple shots yesterday. Haven't we been waiting for that? Etienne coming off the Lisfranc injury, the foot injury last year. To my knowledge, yesterday was the first time he had really absorbed contact. Now, again, it was a practice. It wasn't a game. And I was on an airplane, so I didn't see it. But in talking to people, it was a couple of shots. I mean, it was he got hit yesterday in full pads. Bounced right up and was fine. So that is a great, and I do mean a great, first sign in hoping that Travis Etienne is completely 100% healthy. And I got to tell you, too, the Jaguars have been a snake-bitten football team. Really going back to 2018. 2017, they were very healthy, which is why, in large part, they went where they did in the AFC title game. But think about all the injuries in 18 and 19 and 20 and 21 just piling up one after another after another. It's very early. It's the eighth day of August. Only the Jaguars and the Raiders have played a preseason game. And I'm going to say this while I'm knocking on wood. Hear that? I just knocked on wood. So I'm covering my bases with this. Today, Christian Kirk came up hobbled, I think celebrating a touchdown, hobbled off the field, and you're thinking the worst, right? Absolutely thinking the worst. Looks like he's fine. Did an interview with Hayes Carline of the Franzi Show, didn't even go into the medical tent. Jaguars avoided one right there. It was a scare, but the Jaguars avoided a problem. Go back to Thursday night in Canton, Tyson Campbell laying there on the ground 5 minutes into the first quarter. And you're thinking, oh my gosh, what is going on? That's one of our best defensive players out there. Don't tell me this is happening. Tyson Campbell bounces right up, runs off the field. Is fine. The Jaguars have avoided serious things to this point. Had some scares, and I know it's early, but scares here in Jacksonville turned out to be awful consequences in the last 4 years. At least in the first 2.5 weeks of this camp and the preseason, the scares to this point have turned out to be only that. And let's hope that trend continues. I'll tell you another thing that's interesting too. Will he or won't he? Will Trevor Lawrence play on Friday night? I believe it was Press Taylor, the Jaguar offensive coordinator, earlier today. Said the coaches are still talking through that. They're still analyzing that situation. There are three preseason games left. You got Cleveland on Friday night. You got Pittsburgh a week from Saturday. You end in Atlanta, which includes a couple of joint practices with the Falcons in the days leading up. I know that the injury concern is always going to be there. But here's my concern. And tell me what you think on the text line. Designed by Lifetime Enclosures at 641-1010. Maybe I'm flat out wrong on this. Maybe I'm overthinking it. But I'll tell you my thoughts. You give me yours on the text line. Trevor Lawrence is not Joe Montana. Trevor Lawrence is not Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers. All right? Trevor Lawrence, we hope he's going to be good. We expect him to be good. But to this point, he's a quarterback that's thrown 12 touchdowns and 17 picks. Does not have a high completion percentage. Can you let him sit out the entire preseason? Or let him play very little in the preseason? And you added all these new weapons, right? Christian Kirk, Evan Ingram, Zay Jones. I know he's worked with ETN in the past, but that was 2 years ago. He hasn't played a competitive game with Travis Etienne since their final game at Clemson. Don't you have to build timing in a game? Don't you have to go against a defense that is legitimately trying to stop you as opposed to a defense in practice that will not hit Trevor Lawrence? He's got the red jersey on. And that may not be going 100% full speed because it is practice. Although, like I said, Sundays apparently was 100% full speed, but that's few and far between. I think you need game reps for Trevor and these new guys. I'm not saying play the entire game, but you didn't play in Canton. Are you going to play in Atlanta? I doubt it. Most teams don't play the final preseason game, the starters anyway. So that gives you two options, two chances, Cleveland this week and Pittsburgh the week after. Don't we have to build timing and chemistry and all that with Trevor and these new weapons? Don't we have to see Trevor get out there and throw the ball around a little bit? Well, Green Bay doesn't play Aaron Rodgers. Well, that's Aaron freaking Rodgers. Tampa Bay doesn't want to play Tom Brady. I get it. He's got seven rings. Takes two hands to hold them all. Trevor Lawrence threw 12 touchdowns and 17 picks last year. And even though we all think he's going to be good, and we all expect him to be good, does he not need to play in the preseason? I don't know. I think he does. I got to see him get out there. Something else to think about, too. Remember the Cleveland preseason game last year? Remember Cleveland's backups came in here and beat the Jacksonville starters to death in that first quarter? Urban Meyer's debut. Case Keenum for Cleveland, the backup to Baker Mayfield, looked like Brett Favre in that first quarter. We need to see that reverse this week, don't we? Jacksonville is the team that's already played a game. Cleveland has not. Jacksonville's been in camp a few more extra days than Cleveland, a few more practices. If you already have a game under your belt, and you have three or four more practices under your belt, shouldn't Jacksonville look like the better, more organized, focused team on Friday night? That's something else to keep notice of, too. Tell me what you think on the text line. Designed by Lifetime Enclosures. Do you need to see Trevor play? Do you need to see Trevor out there with these new guys that they signed? Get them some game reps. Or do you say, nope, I'm good. We'll see you in Washington September 11th. 641-1010 on the text line, designed by Lifetime Enclosures. As always, we are streaming Hacker After Dark. Go to the 1010XL YouTube channel. Just search 1010XL on YouTube. You'll see Hacker After Dark there until 10 o'clock tonight. Be sure and like and subscribe while you're there. You can also go to the station Twitter feed, at 1010XL. On Twitter, at 1010XL, you'll see Hacker After Dark there for your viewing pleasure until 10 o'clock. This evening. Coming up next, more on the National Football League. And I want to shift gears into the world of college football. Remember that? We got college football games 19 days away. Let's talk a little college ball. Next, Hacker After Dark on a Monday in Jacksonville. We are glad you are with us.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
Glad you're with us on a Monday night. Hacker After Dark, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Off the text line, designed by Lifetime Enclosures. I'm pretty surprised. The response we've gotten so far, does Trevor Lawrence need to play this preseason? I haven't gotten one person yet that says he needs to play. I got Hack, Justin Herbert has never played in a preseason game. It has not hurt him. Yeah, Justin Herbert didn't throw 12 touchdowns and 17 picks last year. That's kind of my point. Mike from Jack's Beach, I'd love to see Trevor play and the rest of the guys, but they don't necessarily need to. Nope, I'm good waiting to Washington Park. Blank no. I'll say blank no. Trevor does not need to play. Ow, I'm surprised. Look, again, if we're having a show in Tampa right now, we're not asking if Tom Brady needs to play. If we're having a show in Green Bay right now, I'm not asking you if Aaron Rodgers needs to play. There's a lot of markets. Buffalo, right? Cincinnati. Both Los Angeles teams, Rams and Chargers. Obviously, those quarterbacks, if they go into the regular season without a preseason snap, they're probably going to be fine. Is Zach Wilson going to play in New York in the preseason? You bet he is. Is Justin Fields going to play in Chicago this preseason? You bet he is. Mac Jones in New England? Yep. Trey Lance in San Francisco? Yeah, he better. He absolutely better. Second-year quarterbacks that had limited success last year, with the exception of Mac Jones. But even Mac started struggling towards the end of his rookie year. Got to play him, at least a little bit. I'm not saying a whole game. I'm not even saying a half. Get him out there. Let him work up a sweat. Throw a couple of balls. But in this case here in Jacksonville, you're going to be relying on guys that Trevor Lawrence has never taken the field with until opening day if they don't play in the preseason. Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, Evan Engram. You spent a ton of money on these guys. Are you okay not seeing them build that rapport in a game before opening day in Washington? Now, of course, if Trevor plays, and heaven forbid something were to happen, then it's a catastrophe. Then it is a full-blown catastrophe. I get that. But you know as well as I do that on the Monday after the Washington game, if Trevor goes out there and struggles, that you're going to say, you know what? They didn't play in the preseason. They don't have any experience together. Their timing's off. It'll be Monday morning quarterbacking at its finest. So I don't know if there is a right answer. It's certainly an opinion-based question. Does Trevor need to play or not? I would play him. I would play him for a quarter against Cincinnati or against Cleveland. I might play him a quarter, quarter and a half against Pittsburgh, and that would be it. But I do think there is something to being in a game with your new weapons. Look, if Trevor Lawrence had been playing with Marvin Jones and Laviska Shenault for 4 years, and he knew what they were going to do and they knew what he was going to do at the snap of a finger, that's different. You can only do so much, in my opinion, during OTAs and minicamp. You got to make it happen in game time situations. And I would just have a little trepidation if Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, Evan Engram, Travis Etienne to an extent go out there in Washington on the second Sunday in September on opening day and don't have any game reps whatsoever with Trevor Lawrence. We'll see. From a Cleveland point of view, Deshaun Watson's available to play. He can play in the preseason, right? He suspended 6 games in the regular season. What does Cleveland do? Do you play Deshaun Watson? keep in mind what they paid this guy. They gave him a ton of money. He suspended 6 games. He did not play football last year. So Deshaun Watson has not played a competitive football game since, what, December of 2020? So 21 months, basically, 20 months. He has not been out there in a competitive situation. He will be suspended until mid-October. They can't just throw him out there cold turkey, right, after 22 months and say, there you go. There's our $200 million man. Go make it happen in week 7 of the NFL season. I think you got to play Deshaun Watson if you're Cleveland. And will we see that on Friday night here in Jacksonville? We'll go to Cleveland later in the week. We got our Browns correspondent standing by. We'll ask him the tough questions about Deshaun Watson. And we'll see. It'll be a nice test for Jacksonville. Again, that Cleveland team in the preseason last year, their backups beat the Jaguar starters to death. Those Cleveland backups beat the crap out of the Jaguar starters last year in the preseason. So this will be a nice little test for Doug Peterson and what he's implementing. The Jaguars are the one with a game under their belt already. The Jaguars have more practices. Hopefully it shows that. Hopefully it resembles that on Friday night when Cleveland comes in here for preseason game number 2. Shifting gears to the world of college football for a moment. Remember that? Yeah. College football 19 days away, Seminole fans. You're going to walk out of one tunnel. Duquesne is going to walk out of another tunnel, and y'all are going to get it on at Doak Campbell Stadium. Vanderbilt, Hawaii, August 27th. How about that trip for Vanderbilt? That's awesome. Goodness knows they're not going to a bowl game. That will be their bowl game. And in all sincerity, I was telling Tony Smith this on the way home yesterday. Tony of Jaguars Today, biggest Vanderbilt fan I know. And he even said it. That's our bowl game. Yeah, that's cool that Vandy did that. How many SEC teams have visited Hawaii in the regular season? Not many. 10:30 kick on the CBS Sports Network in 19 days. Northwestern and Nebraska kick off the Big Ten in 19 days. Some games that first Saturday. I'm excited about it. So CBSSports.com, every day leading in to the start of college football, is putting out these things to get you thinking a little bit, right? To stir the pot. To start a conversation. They stirred the pot with me earlier today. And I like Barrett Salee. We've had him on. He's a good dude. Really good at what he does, man. I love Barrett. I think he is a terrific college football reporter. And I think he might have did this to, like I said, stir the pot a little bit. He goes through all 50 states, and he says this is the best college football team in each state entering the 2022 season. In the state of Alabama, well, of course, he said the Crimson Tide are the best team in that state. In Arizona, he gave the notch to the Sun Devils over the Wildcats. In California, he said it was USC over every other college football team. Colorado, he didn't pick the Buffaloes or the Rams. He picked Air Force. Interesting. So then we get to Georgia, and of course he picks the Dogs. Very little competition for Georgia in that state. All due respect to Georgia Tech and I guess Georgia State, right? But then I get to the state of Florida. And you could choose between Billy Napier and the Gators, Mario Cristobal and the Canes. What about Mike Norvell and Florida State? Who does Barrett Salee of CBS Sports, again, who I think does a good job, man, really like his work, really love having him on Hacker After Dark. Who does he think the best college football team is in the state of Florida? The UCF Knights. The UCF Knights. Are you kidding? This is what he says. Florida held this title last year, but a disastrous 2021 season that resulted in the dismissal of Coach Dan Mullen can't be ignored. Florida State and Miami are still trying to get back on track, which makes it hard to pick either one of them. UCF has at least 9 wins in 4 of its last 5 seasons and topped the Gators in last season's Gasparilla Bowl. The Knights' grip on the state is tenuous, but the Sunshine State is still black and gold for now. That's laughable to me. It's laughable. You're going to sit here and you're going to say that if UCF and Miami play on a neutral field, play in Tallahassee tomorrow, you're going to pick UCF to beat Miami? Or if UCF and Florida play on a neutral field where Florida actually cares about what's going on, it does not have an interim coach who's going to take a job at like the University of Buffalo or wherever a few days later, has a healthy Anthony Richardson, mind you. Did Anthony Richardson play in that bowl game? I don't think so. He did not. You're going to sit here and tell me UCF is going to beat Anthony Richardson and Billy Napier on a neutral site? Come on, man. Get real. I like Gus Malzahn, and I like what UCF's doing. But to say that they are the best college football team in the state of Florida entering 2022 is ridiculous. Now, could UCF beat Florida State? I think there's more of a conversation there. I would still pick Florida State to win, but I don't think it's outrageous to say UCF could stay on the field with FSU right now. But in no way, shape, or form would I pick UCF to beat Miami. And in no way, shape, or form would I pick UCF to beat a Gator team who actually cares and who has Anthony Richardson as their quarterback. UCF beat a Florida team with Emory Jones and a coaching staff that was going to be out the door the next day. That's the Florida team UCF beat. And if that makes me a Gator homer, so be it. But you, unless you're a UCF grad or a UCF diehard, who's picking UCF to beat Florida in a neutral site game in Miami tomorrow with a healthy Anthony Richardson at quarterback? Denmark, you're a Gator alum. It's ridiculous, right, to say UCF is the best team in the state?
I'd say it's a stretch. That would be the word I use.
And this isn't even a Gator homerism thing. UCF would not beat Miami.
I mean, like, think about how many dudes does UCF have that could play for Florida, Miami, or Florida State?
Well, the Florida transfers are UCF's better players now. Kamari Gamble, DeMarcus Bowman. And again, I'm not trying to rip UCF. They are a good program. They're moving into the Big 12. They did beat Florida. They did. They had the Gator logo on the helmet, and they were wearing orange and blue. Didn't have Anthony Richardson, though, did they? I just think that to say UCF is the best team in the state, yeah, I don't agree with that. 641-1010 is the phone number. Hey, UCF fans, where are you at? Am I wrong? 2022, are you the best team in the state? Are you better than Miami? Are you better than Florida State? Are you better than Florida? CBSSports.com thinks you are. Took me off guard. Mia O'Brien of XL Primetime. She did a terrific job all weekend in Canton, putting out tons of content, including that video. It's like a 3-minute video that she put together, putting a bow on Big Bo in the Hall of Fame in Canton. Absolutely terrific. We'll talk with Mia about the weekend that was. She was out at practice today. Jaguar football with Mia O'Brien next. Hacker After Dark on a Monday here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL. Now, Hello.
Another great guest on the Farrah and Farrah phone line. Brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville. We are glad you are with us. Back from Canton, Ohio. The Jaguars back on the practice field. And that wheel keeps turning. The Cleveland Browns roll in on Friday for preseason game number 2. Mia O'Brien of XL Primetime joins us here on Hacker After Dark. Mia, let me first say, that video that you put together when we were coming back from Canton to kind of wrap up Tony Boselli's speech and just the weekend events up there in the state of Ohio, absolutely fantastic. If you have not seen it, 1010XL Twitter, 1010XL Facebook. Mia, congrats to you. That video is outstanding.
I appreciate it, Hack. This way, now you know, I wasn't just avoiding talking to you and Tony Smith in the airport. It was very much a let me grind out this video, make sure we get it out there for our listeners, for our viewers, and obviously very happy with everything that we were able to do out there in Canton. There's actually a couple ideas still on the drawing room floor that we didn't get to do, so obviously keep it locked in right here throughout the course of training camp in the 2022 season.
Mia, it was a great weekend. As I start reflecting back on it, thank you to our boss man, Steve Griffin, Donna Murphy, who made a lot of the accommodations for us. From a radio station point of view, it was fantastic, but obviously the bigger picture, the Jaguar organization, the city. Boy, what a weekend in Canton, Ohio.
Yeah, it was absolutely magnificent. You know, a lot of folks and a lot was made of the fact that Tony really was arguably one of the biggest names, the first Jaguar to go into the Hall. Obviously, Leroy Butler's a huge name, too. But there was no Peyton. There was no, quarterback going in with this year's class. And so I think a lot of people were curious to see what the turnout would be. And in turn, what we saw was a complete Duval takeover. And again, credit to Leroy's family, too. I mean, they are, you know, Duval born and raised. And so I'll say this much, Hack. Every official event we were at, all I could think was, wow, all these people from Oakland and San Francisco are probably like, who the heck is Duval? Like, what is this that they're yelling? Because it didn't matter if it was Tony or if it was when Leroy got his name called. You just heard nothing but Duval chants. And that speaks to this great city that we live in and how many people from here made the pilgrimage up to Ohio.
Yeah, there is no question about that. It was Jacksonville North up there. Absolutely. The speech itself, Mia, I thought it was very cool to be there at Tom Benson Hall of Fame Stadium in Canton, Ohio, to see every speech. But when Tony got up there acknowledging Jaguar fans, acknowledging our colleagues like Jeff Prosser, Dan Hicken, Frank Frangie, I thought Tony's speech on Saturday was a home run, Mia. I thought he knocked it out of the park.
Absolutely. And it was one of those things, Hack, where I was running around with the camera with Tony's family and everybody else. And so I didn't really get to appreciate it. And then speaking with him afterwards, you know, he kept complimenting Jim Woodcock, who, of course, has been Shad Khan's longtime PR guy and is a terrific dude. And Jim really helped Tony quell a lot of his fears because they kept them at 8 minutes. Obviously, we know not everyone stuck to that. But I know Leroy and Tony, they gave very specific instructions to both of them that they needed to be around 8 minutes. And that was really daunting for Tony. And so Jim was really able to help him put that together. And so it's funny you mentioned that recap video, because when I was editing it yesterday, that was truly when I actually sat down. And as someone who has been blessed to give a lot of big speeches, like I'm kind of a nerd for that sort of thing. It goes back to my speech and debate high school competitive speech and debate days. And so I went back and, you know, listened to it as I was editing, and I was like, wow, this actually is such a really well-written speech. There was a great circular arc to it, the concept of family, which obviously we know is very important to Tony. So it was awesome. It was funny. It really wasn't until yesterday at 1 o'clock editing in the Canton Akron Airport that I was like, damn, he was right. That really was a good speech.
Mia O'Brien of XL Primetime. All right, Mia, the Boselli chapter, it was great. We move on now. We start to focus again on the Jaguars. And look, it's been 5 days, right? 4 days since the Jaguars played that game in Canton. Cleveland's coming in on Friday. That game is right around the corner, preseason game number 2. You were out at practice this morning. Just your thoughts on what you saw out there as the Jaguars get ready for preseason game number 2.
For sure, Hack. One of the big storylines is actually what we missed yesterday while we were in transit from Ohio. arguably, according to our guy, Mark Long of the Associated Press, who's been covering the Jaguars since 2000. Don't quote me, but I believe it's 2000. Sorry, Mark, that I'm dating you. But the point is that he has been to a lot of training camp practices. He has been working and covering this team under a lot of different coaches. And he said that Sunday's practice was the most intense practice since Jack Del Rio and the Oklahoma drills that he would have the team do in front of fans at open practices. And that was, you know, 2005. So we're talking almost 17 years of, you know, whatever you want to call it, type practices. And that also includes, of course, Doug Marrone's first season in 2017, TC's first season back in the building. And so knowing full well that Sunday it was as live could be, we knew today would be a little bit less, a little bit less hitting. There was still some popping, but not quite to the level that I'm told it was on Sunday. Today was a lot more one-on-one drills, which in talking to Press Taylor is really what they came out of Thursday with positives from. They felt that guys were winning their one-on-one matchups, even if it wasn't resulting in points or in defensive stops like the way they were hoping for. Because that's what he said that first preseason game really was, retention and did you look like you wanted to be there? And that's how they're going to start making their evaluations with the rest of this 93 and then 53-man roster. And so today's practice was a little bit more one-on-one. We saw guys like Zay Jones really step up to the plate. I was just talking to him after practice, not on the record or anything. And he's a quirky dude, man. I told him I'm going to trademark the phrase the most interesting man in all of Duval because that's him. But he looked really sharp out there today. He was the only receiver that didn't drop a single pass, caught everything that was contested and thrown his way. And when Christian Kirk pulled up a little limp on a touchdown celebration and then was held out of the final team period, that really allowed Zay to shine even more. On the offensive line, defensive line side of things, on the other side of the field, I should say, because, of course, there was 7-on-7 on one side, and then the linemen were getting after it on the other side of the field. We saw Juwan Taylor back on the field for the first time since a hamstring injury early last week sidelined him for the second half of the week, including the Hall of Fame game. And I'll just tell you this, Hack, if Walker Little doesn't win the job, I'm not really sure what's happening with the right tackle position. And it's nothing against Juwan, but it's just very evident. And obviously, you know, Walker's specialty is pass rush. That's something that Juwan isn't always, you know, the best at. He might be better in the run game. And Phil Rauscher, the offensive line coach, has told me that they want to run the football, so maybe that's part of it. But to me, there was no question that Walker Little looked the best among next to Cam Robinson, who remains perfect in those pass rush drills, by the way. Walker Little looked second best to him, and Juwan Taylor was getting beat by the likes of Kalevon Chaisson and some other guys that won't be on the 53-man roster.
Yeah, it's not a good look. Apparently, I mean, coming back from injury, maybe you give him the benefit of the doubt, but clearly Walker Little has looked the part when Juwan Taylor's been out. It'll be interesting to see in the next, I guess, two preseason games how they divvy up the reps at right tackle. Mia, we talk about Sunday's practice and the physicality of Sunday's practice. Do you think that had anything to do with what we saw Thursday night in Canton, or was that something Doug Peterson probably had planned regardless?
From what we've been told, and I know I've talked to Doug and Coach Campo has obviously talked to Doug extensively, it was planned. This was the plan all along. That's why he really wasn't too concerned coming out of the Hall of Fame game. Hayes Carlion was saying to me earlier today how he couldn't believe how calm Doug was. In my conversations with assistant coaches on the staff, that's just who Doug is. Doug has a long-term plan, and as long as they're on course with that long-term plan, he's not worried. I will tell you this. Again, I was not there Sunday, as neither were you or anyone else from 1010XL because we were on the airplane, but apparently Doug did hint that there is going to be another live, intense, crazy day of practice next week. We did the math and we are assuming that would be next Monday. And that would be before the Jaguars Saturday preseason game, week three against the Steelers. And so it'll be curious to see if it's as live as yesterday was. The guys really seem to respond well to it. I asked Trevor about, you know, seeing Travis Etienne get popped a couple times. And he said, he's like, Travis, number one, craves that contact. But number two, like, this is like, that's what you want to see from him, knowing the injury that he had, that he wants to get back to that. And he said at Clemson, Travis was never afraid of contact. He just never got hurt, though. And so, yeah, there's a little bit in the back of your mind that you got to protect your guys, but also you want your guys to be ready because that's just as hard as the defenders are going to come in real life action.
Final moments here with Mia O'Brien. You get her on XL primetime here on 1010XL. Mia, Press Taylor, I guess earlier this week at practice said that They're still walking through whether Trevor Lawrence is going to play or not on Friday night against Cleveland. My thought when I read that was this. We got to be careful. At least I think you got to be careful. This isn't Joe Montana, right? This isn't Tom Brady. This is a guy that threw 12 touchdowns and 17 picks last year. You bring in all these new weapons like Kirk and Zay Jones and Evan Ingram, and if you're not going to play him very much in the preseason, I'd like to see some reps before that Washington game on September 11th. Am I overthinking that, or do you think we should see Trevor a little bit here, maybe on Friday night or certainly next week against Pittsburgh?
Personally, I do think you'll see Trevor on Friday, Hack. I think it'll be about two series, maybe a first quarter worth of action. Talking to Travis Etienne, it seems like he wants to play. And if you're going to play him, you're going to play Trevor. It's just the fact of the matter, because you want them to, you know, obviously they have 3 years of experience at Clemson together, but you want them to get those reps together in a live game. I'm most curious, not to flip the question on you, I am most curious to see if Deshaun Watson plays on Friday. That's what I think the real question mark is, whether, he's eligible to play, if they opt to play him. Obviously, this will be Cleveland's first preseason game. It'll be the Jaguars' second. And so I think that might also factor into the outcome if you want to keep score in this game, just because the Jaguars have had more padded practices, and they will have had more padded practices by Friday.
Yeah, it looked like the Raiders were ahead of Jacksonville, and the Raiders reported about 4 or 5 days ahead of the Jaguars. Well, now the script is flipped. The Jaguars have had 4 or 5 more days of practice than Cleveland, so you would hope on Friday night that looks the part, that Jacksonville is a little bit more prepared than Cleveland is.
Absolutely, yes, Hack. I couldn't agree more. And so we'll see what happens. This is also it's an interesting Cleveland team in that it's veteran on the defensive side of the ball, but obviously there's a lot of question marks at wide receiver, at tight end, running back. I mean, now Kareem Hunt's asking for a trade. And so it'll be curious to see who they play, since it is only their first preseason game.
All right, Mia, leave us with this. The Book of Bo wrapped up. All 6 episodes are still available wherever you find your podcast. But episode 6 dropped last Friday as everybody was en route to Canton. Now that it's in the books and it's all out there to be viewed and to be watched and to be listened to, your thoughts on how the Book of Bo series came out here on 1010XL?
Yeah, I couldn't be happier with the response. I'll tell you that, Hack. We had so many people in Canton come up to us and tell us how much they loved it and that they listened to it on the drive or the flight there. And, you know, that warms my heart, because that's obviously, you know, why we do it. I can't thank the Baselli family enough for the access that they provided. Especially, someone put this best, you know, in context on Twitter earlier this week, that, you know, I didn't start full time at 1010 until April. We only knew about Tony getting into the hall in February, even though I obviously was part-time here at the time. We didn't start this project and get it approved by Tony until May 10th or whatever it was at the J Fund golf outing. And so it was obviously a quick turnaround. So I can't thank Graham Marsh enough for those endless sleepless nights that he and I put in over the last few weeks. But I'm very, very happy with how it turned out. As we originally stated, this was inspired by Tyler R. Tyne's The Cam Chronicles, which was a part of the Ringer NFL show. And obviously that was a audio documentary. This obviously took on a life of its own. And in addition to being audio documentary, it also was a visual podcast with the video element. It's been really fun to hear how many people watched it, how many people listened to it, and vice versa. And so I'm going to be honest with you, though, Hack. I actually have not watched the final 2 episodes. I obviously wrote them, but I have not actually seen the visual form. We were a little bit busy with the Canton preparations. And so I reached a point where I said to Graham, I said, I trust you, man. I'm not worried. And obviously I know he's known the Baselli family since he was, you know, before he was 10 years old. And so I know this is a project he took a lot of pride in, especially growing up here in the city of Jacksonville. So I said, I trust you, my man. Like, I'm not worried. I know you're getting it done. And I knew Dan was going to handle the narration. I actually did sit in on him narrating it. So I knew that part was going to be good. But yeah, I'm thinking tonight, maybe after I maybe take a nap or something, I'm probably going to sit down and actually try to watch as many episodes as I can in continuation, you know, in succession, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, just to get the full feel of it. But again, can't thank not only the Baselli family and their friends, but also everyone here at 1010XL that was so supportive of this project.
And you can check out all six episodes, The Book of Bo, where you get your podcasts, and certainly you can find them on the 1010XL YouTube, 1010XL Facebook, just to name a few places. Mia O'Brien of 1010XL. Mia, thank you for the time. Enjoyed the Canton weekend with you, and we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely, Hack.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
Halftime here on Hacker After Dark. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. We'll take you till 10 o'clock tonight. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Graham Hall covers the Florida Gators for 247sports.com. He's less than 15 minutes away. Lauren Brooks, you get her every day on the Frangie Show. She is coming up at the bottom of the hour. Denmark, I am a, what do you say, an electric razor guy, right? I like to shave the old face here and charge the razor back up, shave it again the next morning. Translation, I'm not a guy that likes to use those $2 Bic, I guess, razors that you get at any, you know, convenience store, CVS, Walgreens, etc.
We're all man's men here, right?
Yeah, that's just not my thing. But as we were traveling to Canton, I did not take my electric razor with me. And I realized this. I was like, well, got to do something because I'm going to have a very hairy face if I don't shave over the next 5 days. So I got one of the, you know, cheap razors.
You get what you pay for, man.
Saturday, we're getting ready to go to the Baselli Enshrinement at Tom Benson Hall of Fame Stadium there in Canton, Ohio. And, I mean, I'm shaving quick because I'm in a car with Hicken and Prosser, and when they're ready to go, they're ready to go, right? So I get the bat signal on the phone. They're in the lobby. It's go time. So I'm wrapping up my shave, throwing my shoes on, and I realize, uh-oh, I've taken a chunk out of my face on the left side, and it's one of those that just won't stop bleeding. So now what do I do? Now I'm either going to have to not go with Hicken and Prosser, wait for the hour-long ordeal to come to an end, or do you grab a white hotel towel and you just deal with it, thinking it'll stop on the ride in? So I do that. Grab the towel, throw it up against my face, put some pressure there. Hicken, Prosser, me. Who else was in the car? I think it was Leon and Mia. We were all in the car heading to the Hall of Fame induction. We get out of the car, get on the media shuttle. Still bleeding. Get out of the media shuttle. Walk 19 miles to the stadium because where the media shuttle dropped us off was in another zip code, I believe, from the stadium.
You got your steps in this weekend, man.
I did.
The airport.
There's no question. There was a lot of walking involved. Still bleeding. So then I get into the stadium, and I think I am the only person. I take this as an honor, as a privilege, that I'm willing to bet I'm probably the only person in the history of the Hall of Fame induction ceremony that went up to the press box bleeding from cutting his face with a razor. Because I had Pete Prisco, I had Sal Palantonio, I had who's who of NFL media say, hey, man, do you know you're bleeding? No, I have no idea. I just got this washcloth attached to my face. It was a good one, I'll tell you. But finally, my good friend Matt Hayes went into paramedic mode, put some pressure on it for me, got it to stop, had a great rest of the day. What's the moral of the story? I will never use a cheap razor again in my life. I will pack my electric razor wherever I go for the rest of the time I am on planet Earth. Because I don't ever want to have a situation like I had this past weekend. No, Lauren Brooks got a kick out of it. We'll talk about that with her at the bottom of the 9 o'clock hour. Fun was had for all that saw me having to have the white towel upon my face in the middle of the press box during the Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Speaking of the Hall of Fame, CBS Sports put out a list, the top 20 players still not in the Hall of Fame. And I'm scrolling and I'm looking. And I don't see Fred Taylor's name anywhere on this list. More on that tomorrow night, but that is absolutely ridiculous. You can't tell me Fred Taylor is not one of the 20 best to still not be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Graham Hall covers the Florida Gators for 247sports.com. Does a terrific job. Florida, 26 days away from Utah. Saturday, September 3rd, Florida fall practice has begun. Let's talk about it with Graham Hall over in Gainesville. That is next. Hacker After Dark on a Monday here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now.
Hello.
Another great guest on the Farrah and Farrah phone line. Brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville. We are glad you are with us. You know, all the talk about Tony Boselli going into Canton, all the Jaguar coverage we have had and will continue to have, mind you, you start to lose track a little bit. We're 19 days away, 19 days away from the first college football weekend, and we are 26 days away from Utah coming to Gainesville to take on the Florida Gators. Let's head to Gainesville. Graham Hall covers the Florida Gators for 247sports.com, and he's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Graham, it's been a little while, man. How are you?
It has been. It was quite an off season, but honestly, it felt like it went through in a blink of an eye here. We are, like you said, 3 weeks away from a lot of football descending upon us here. And as you kind of mentioned here, this is one of the toughest matchups to open a season for the Florida Gators that I can remember here. I mean, maybe that Michigan game in 2017, but this is a different caliber in my mind. And it gives Florida the potential of opening the season 0-1 at home to begin the Billy Napier era.
You know, Graham, a guy like you that covers the Gators on a daily basis, from when Billy Napier got hired in December to putting together that huge staff, not only of coaches but of recruiting, to the recruiting signing days, to spring practice and summer conditioning and media days and Elite 11 and all of this stuff, and now we're finally here. Inside of a month until Billy Napier actually coaches a game on the Gator sideline, I would imagine everybody down there in Gainesville, yourself included, is ready for a little bit of football.
I would think so. You know, I've been using kind of the metaphor of the hurricane here, and I know that's not really the mascot that a lot of Florida fans want to think of right now, but it's because so much is swirling around the sport right now. Transfer portal, NIL, I mean, we're seeing things, the landscape reshaped right now, kind of by a hurricane. And the games themselves are kind of that beautiful eye of the storm where we can just for 4 hours and throughout the week focus on the games, talk about the players who are actually here right now rather than the focus on prospective players. You mentioned the recruiting for judging Billy Napier. That is one of those things that is really, I think, specific individual to these past two decades, is being able to have this opinion about a head coach based on the amount of recruiting information that is out there. You go to 24/7 Sports, you go to any of these websites that cover recruiting daily, and you can really get a sense of how a coach is doing, who they're going after, and who they're missing on. And it can lead to this perception here after just 8-9 months in a place like Gainesville or in Coral Gables, that a coach is either doing a good job or a bad job before they ever step on the field and coach a game. And I think that's kind of when a lot of the stuff is going to be evened out. These recruiting advantages we're seeing some schools have through NIL, you name it. I think the season has always kind of been a correction of the means, in a sense, a return to normalcy at a time where you really can see the best teams right now are going to shape the landscape of recruiting, not necessarily NIL. And I think there's a lot of people just waiting for this to get here so we can focus on that. I think especially Billy Napier, because so much of the conversation has been about Florida's NIL efforts and the transfer portal and the current roster, that I think that this guy wants a lot of people to judge him based on how those 60 minutes of football unfold.
Graham Hall, 247sports.com. All right, Graham, let's dive in to the 2022 Gators and what we're going to expect this year. And there are a couple of things coming out of media days and conversations I've had that I'm going to throw at you, and you tell me how much of a concern you believe they are. Again, a guy that covers Florida football every day. Number one, I've heard that starting 22 for starting 22, Florida can compete with a lot of teams in the SEC. The potential problem is players 23 through 50, meaning they might have a depth issue. Is that a concern for Gator fans, yes or no, and why?
That's spot on. I think that the first 22 guys right now are extremely solid up and down the roster. I mean, starting with Anthony Richardson, and you look at an offensive line that added Osiris Torrance and returns three starters of last year. It's high on a lot of guys that they're bringing in. You look at the backfield, bringing in Montrell Johnson. You return Justin Shorter. You added Ricky Purcell and tight end. I mean, you're going to run a lot of 12-man formations. So as long as you have two capable tight ends on the field, this offense could absolutely be better than the one last year. And then look on defense. Yeah, they have to replace Kyer Elam in the secondary, but you got Jason Marshall Jr. right there, impressive guy. You have two returning safeties. You've got Brenton Cox Jr. there. You got Ventrell Miller back. You have Jervon Dexter. I mean, I can go on and on and on about Florida's first 22 guys right now. After them, what you just said, I think is a huge concern right now. There are some guys on this roster that I would say would struggle to be re-offered by this staff if they were going through as a recruit right now. That's probably the best way that I can put it without kind of coming out and disrespecting anyone, is that there are some people here who are going to struggle to play at the SEC level on Florida's roster. And that doesn't mean that Florida's necessarily going to have to play them this season, but injuries are a huge part of this game. If Florida sees guys go down at several positions, you could see some guys who are unproven and have a little lower ceiling than a lot of the rest of the SEC who have to come in and see the field this year. Defensive line is a huge concern. The interior of the defensive line, I think if you lose a guy like Jervon Dexter or Desmond Watson, is really not in the improved shape that Florida staff and fans were hoping that he would be at, that could be a huge drop off just based on the amount of experience there and some of the, just like I said, skill sets of other guys on that roster. So I think that Florida really, they're kind of in a precarious position right now where they have to emphasize physicality in practice, especially tackling. But if you see guys like Ventrell Miller go down, Jason Marshall Jr., Trey Dean, if any of those guys go down in Florida's defense or in the front seven, you could absolutely see a huge drop off, which for Florida fans, I think that that wouldn't be too surprising based on last year. You had Miller go out, there was a drop off. You had the scheme where I think that Florida could only do so much. The hope for a lot of Florida fans is that the simplified scheme is going to lead to a lot of these unproven guys being able to play at a higher level than they would have last year. I think that that remains to be seen, absolutely. But that's, I think, what the optimistic perspective is when you look at some of these depth concerns, the experience issues. You think that maybe the coaching staff, their preparation over the last 8 months can kind of accelerate the development and make up some of these shortcomings. Again, that remains to be seen. So I can't come out here right now and say, oh, it's going to be fine if any of these guys go down, because we truly don't know that yet.
Graham, you said it, and I've heard it from so many people, run defense. There is a thought that the Gator run defense is going to be a problem. After Dexter in the middle of that D-line, quite frankly, there's not a lot of proven college football commodities. So my question to you, and you hit on it there a little bit, what can Billy Napier, what can his defensive coaches, if anything, do to protect that vulnerability of the run defense in the middle of that D-line, whether it's bring safeties down, bring linebackers closer? Because if there's one weakness, Graham, you don't want to have in the SEC, and that's run defense. We saw it time and time again last year.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that with this Florida team, you have a lot of guys last year out of position, overcommitting. You name it here. If Florida can set the edge this season and they can disguise the rush, the amount of defensive backs on the field should make up for some of the inadequacies that I think Florida has from a personnel standpoint, along with the scheme. And what I mean by that is that if Florida can, like I just said, it's hard to out-scheme someone right now, but if you can have a scheme that allows everyone to just use their athleticism and their natural football instincts, and I have to think about too much, where they generally know their assignments based on what the other team is doing, I think that absolutely that can make up a lot of the deficits, like I said. So I think with Florida, that's going to be the huge thing, especially in their run defense. I think that if you can get guys like Amari Burney, who I think did struggle last season in run defense, if you can get him and Ventrell Miller to certainly fill some of the holes there in the interior of the defensive line that I think will appear, I think that Florida is going to be fine. But that interior of the defensive line could be the huge issue for Florida. Even with, you know, Jermon Dexter coming back, I think he's incredibly impressive. I think that there are some rumblings that maybe they're not going to get as much from a rep standpoint out of Desmond Watson as they really would have liked. I think if that's the case, Florida is going to have trouble plugging the middle and stopping the run here this season. And as you know, there's a lot of really good, capable running backs that they're going to face on the roster this year. McIntosh, John Emery Jr., I mean, you name it. So absolutely that remains to be seen with Florida. But in guys in their front seven that you have coming back, I saw an article recently that said Florida had no guys of impact in their front seven. I just think that's categorically untrue. I mean, you look at Jervon Dexter, that is a guy who is in better shape. You look at Brenton Cox, I mean, 8.5 sacks last season, 14.5 tackles for loss, and he played injured through the entire season. I mean, and then you get Ventrell Miller back, who is just a surefire tackler. This is a defense that could be much better than I think a lot of people think. But right now, I'm not going to go out on a limb and say that they are absolutely going to be better. But there's a lot of promise.
A couple of more for Graham Hall, 24/7 Sports, covering the Florida Gators. He's with us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Graham, let's go to the other side, the offensive side of the ball, Anthony Richardson. We're about a week in to camp. What's the thought on Richardson a week in getting ready for that Utah game, Labor Day weekend?
Yeah, let me shut this down in case there's any inklings here or questions right now. Anthony Richardson's Florida's starting quarterback. There's not really a battle between him and Jack Miller, although the coaching staff is still pushing Jack, obviously. Jalen Kitna didn't practice the other day. I mean, they didn't bring in another quarterback. They have a freshman on the roster. This is Anthony Richardson's team, is what I am saying. And he has absolutely owned that through practice. He is carrying himself like more of a leader. He's more neutral than he even was before. And that's what I always said was one of those underrated values of Richardson. When I could ever get someone in the room to listen about Anthony Richardson's strengths, yeah, they'd say all the obvious arm strength, looks like Cam Newton. You know, I've heard them all in all, time and time again. But the one difference that I say is between Anthony's demeanor and Cam Newton's demeanor, and I'm a huge Cam fan, so this isn't an insult, but he's not as loud, bombastic. He doesn't talk confidently about himself often. He's very reserved in his demeanor. Humble is a great way to describe it. And that's kind of the personality in my mind that you want on the field as a starting quarterback. Someone who is going to get upset at the bad throws, yes, but they're not going to let it carry over where they're trying to make amends for it on the next series. I think you go back to last season and you look at clips of him where he was at his best. It was when Florida, where he was playing pressure free, and Florida was sometimes even behind in those situations because he really wasn't forcing anything in a sense. He you can make the case for him that he is one of these guys who is just kind of a quiet leader in a sense. And yeah, he gets animated and he can sometimes talk some trash out there. Absolutely. But this is a guy who is mature. And I think that is one of his most underrated aspects heading into the season. Yeah, there's going to be some interceptions. There are going to be some plays that fall apart. The other day in practice, he threw a pick six and rebounded incredibly. And it's more about how you rebound than the fact the mistake happened. Every great quarterback is going to go out there and misfire on some throws. It's how you respond to not let it become to use another Panthers quarterback, not become a Jake Delhomme in the playoffs for interceptions type situation there where you become rattled. His ability to regain his focus, get back and focus on the next play is, I think, one of his most impressive attributes. And I think you're going to see that this season.
Graham, we got about 90 seconds. So a quick thought. And again, we'll hopefully do this one more time before that Utah game on Labor Day weekend. But I haven't talked to you since all the preseason magazines came out, since media days, and pretty much across the board, Florida's picked third or fourth in the SEC East. Some have even Tennessee and Kentucky above them, along with Georgia. Is that about right, or do you think people might be sleeping on this Gator team?
I think they might slightly be sleeping on this Gator team, but I think right now you're also seeing kind of a perfect storm of circumstances, and I kind of to go back to that hurricane metaphor earlier. I mean, you look at a Kentucky team that has stability fan investment, and now they have a really good quarterback. They're benefiting from the transfer portal. I mean, they just won a recruiting battle over Florida State. I mean, that would not have happened a decade ago, where you could have said, oh, of course they're going to Florida State. I mean, of course they're not going to Florida State. They're going to Kentucky to play for a team that may finish second in the SEC East and may have another top 15 finish. No guarantees of that in Tallahassee. That absolutely is the case right now. And Florida fans, for them, that is kind of jarring right now, because for so long it was, what, 31 years of that streak where the Gators had beat. I mean, that's longer than that's longer than I've been alive, man. So to reconcile the recent streak, which was only 8 years ago, I think, where that was snapped, maybe even less, when the fact that Kentucky may be a better team, I think they certainly proved that last season, but they may once again be a better team. I think that's a lot of – that's difficult for Florida fans to accept. With Tennessee, I think that right now I'm a little bit less likely to say that Tennessee is a better team than Florida. And the big reason is because – of the defense. I think that Tennessee's defense is getting more respect than I would give them right now. And you can't win in this league without a defense. They don't even have a starting 11 that I think is top 10 on defense in the SEC. So when you factor that in, and the points I just made about Florida having a really good starting defense, in my mind, 11 guys that they really can count on, when you factor those two things, when you combine those two things and consider them both, it's hard for me to really say that Tennessee right now is a better team than Florida. The reason I think they could finish third is the schedule, the fact that they have, I think, really good fan investment right now, and they're going to have a really big home crowd because those fans are bought in to believe that this is their time to get back into the upper echelon. I think that and the schedule with Hendon Hooker, I think he's a really good quarterback. I was saying it last year that Florida got really lucky that they hadn't settled on a signal caller last year. Those factors combined, I can see the Gators finishing fourth, but it could be separated by one game really here. So if you're a Florida fan, I wouldn't put too much stock into that. You just want to see gradual improvement, knowing that the schedule is difficult and some of the teams ahead of you just have a perfect storm of circumstances. I mean, you can't even consider being number one with what Georgia is doing right now. So,
which is amazing, because Georgia, again, 15 drafted guys, not to mention transfers, graduation, and there's not even a conversation to be had. They are clearly still the best team in the SEC East. Graham Hall covers the Gators for 247sports.com. Graham, always enjoy the conversation, man. We always appreciate you. Let's do it maybe game week leading into Utah at the beginning of September.
You got it. This is a lot of fun. We got to link back up. Thanks for having me on.
Now.
Yellow.
Another interview on the Farrah and Farrah phone line, brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Back from the state of Ohio, the Jaguars back on the practice field this morning. Lauren Brooks of the Frangie Show was at the airport last night at 9 o'clock, and she was at the Jaguar practice fields this morning. That is dedication, is what that is, and she's with us here on Hacker After Dark. Lauren, how you doing?
Well, Hacker, I just have to say thank you for having me on. This is my inaugural time on the show, and I am honored to be joining you.
Well, Lauren, we certainly appreciate it, and let's just recap the Canton trip really quick. I think I have a newfound respect for the Charlotte International Airport as we were dropped off on the northwest quadrant and had to walk to the southeast quadrant. That was the most incredible airport journey of my life. But all in all, a very cool weekend, and what a moment for the city of Jacksonville, and especially Tony Boselli there on Saturday.
You said it very well. I think all of Jacksonville had just a monumental day, a magnificent and monumental day on Saturday. And look, starting with our trip there, it was, I mean, just smooth sailing. And these days you don't really often hear people who travel as, you know, far as we did without issues. And for the most part, we got through it pretty well. So that was a lot of fun. And then, you know, getting to go to the Hall of Fame game, that was my first time certainly ever going there at Tom Benson Stadium. The Jaguars didn't play all that well, but the experience was cool getting to see Tony Boselli that night walk across the field. I think, you know, all Jaguars fans were watching and had chill bumps. And then to, you know, fast forward to Saturday, I did not get to attend the Gold Jacket dinner that was during our show. But then Saturday, the enshrinement, I was just amazed at how many Jaguars fans made the trip. And just how wonderful the people of Canton were. Everywhere we went, you know, they know that that's a big weekend for them. And so certainly they celebrate it. And having Lloyd Butler go in too, I thought his speech to kick things off on Saturday for the enshrinement was fantastic. And then Tony's speech was just unbelievable. He absolutely crushed it. And pretty cool, Hacker, to think we work with people that got mentioned, right? He started with Dan Hicken and Jeff Prosser, who'd been teasing him for years about whether or not they'd be in the speech. And then he got to Frank Frangi and Jeff Lagerman. And so just really cool. Pete Prisco, who we have on our show every Friday, got mentioned. John Osher, Gene Fournette. It was just amazing that Tony took all that time to really craft that speech. And so from start to finish, the weekend was fantastic. And yes, of course, I was at Jaguars practice this morning. That's what I do. But Hacker, I think the audience needs to know what happened in the press box on Saturday before the enshrinement ceremony began.
Well, you know, look, I have an electric razor, right? I never have to shave with a $2 razor from a drugstore. And let's just say I pulled my best Freddy Krueger enactment, got a little cut on my face, and you know, it was quite the moment. I don't know how many people have ever walked into Tom Benson Hall of Fame Stadium in Canton bleeding from their chin from a razor cut, but I can put that one on my list. That's a notch, Lauren, in my belt, so I'm very proud of that honor.
So for people who didn't get to be there, we show up at the press box, and we're sitting down, you know, just chit-chatting, and then all of a sudden Hacker appears with this washcloth that is covered in blood.
Oh, it was bad.
And we're like, who did you murder on your way up here? What in the world? But yes, finally it stopped bleeding. All was well with the world. And it worked out, I think, pretty well. You were wearing a red shirt considering the blood was spattering.
Well, the best part was like Prisco, I think Sal Palantonio. I mean, the who's who of NFL media. Like, hey, man, you know you're bleeding? No, I had no idea. I just got this washcloth here attached to my face. Had absolutely no idea, you know. But all in all, it worked out. And it, by the way, for anybody, whether it's a Jaguar or not, that needs to be a bucket list item for NFL fans to go to that ceremony. That entire day was outstanding. Seeing all the inductees get in, the way they do that there in Canton, that was really something I'll remember for a long time.
I totally agree. It was so special. And I mean, just if the Jaguars didn't have someone, you know, getting enshrined, obviously all of us wouldn't have been able to be there and go for something like it. But you're right. I highly Football Hall of Fame was really cool. Unfortunately, when we went, it was super packed, so we didn't really get to take our time. It was, you know, elbow to elbow kind of thing. But that just goes to show you, you know, the power of this week and all of the events surrounding the Hall of Fame. And so, yeah, I'm with you. I talked to some Jaguars fans after the enshrinement that had made their way up. They had an Airbnb outside of Canton, and they said that if Tom Coughlin or Fred Taylor goes in the near future, they are 100% going back up, doing it all over again. They absolutely loved it.
Lauren Brooks of the Frangi Show here with us on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Lauren, we got in last night. You were out at practice today. By all indications, a very good day for the offense and quarterback Trevor Lawrence connecting with his wide receivers down the field.
It was a good day, and here are a few things that I noticed that were also good news. Yesterday was the really intense practice, and a couple different players, for instance, Will Richardson had to kind of step to the side due to injuries, and they were all back today, so that was good. Christian Kirk, everyone got a little nervous when it looked like he might have injured his ankle, but it was just a rolled up ankle, so nothing there. So really, the Jaguars have been very fortunate injury-wise to this point. But the big question, of course, with a game coming up Friday night, and we're all expecting Cleveland to start Deshaun Watson, is who will the Jaguars play at quarterback? Well, Press Taylor this morning did not give any indication as to whether or not Trevor will play Friday night. They are still talking about that. So that, for me, was one of the big questions I had for this week, but we're still not sure what's going to happen there. But yes, Trevor Lawrence looked good. He talked after practice. He told us how this is the best he's felt during the football in a while because of all the different things that he's worked on as far as his mechanics are concerned. And he's been able to get stronger over the off season. And of course, a year ago, he had just come off of surgery. So, and of course, we all know how dysfunctional everything was. But so Trevor is feeling great, and he loves the different wide receivers that he has and the different things that they can do. And of course, Evan Engram, technically a tight end, but he looks great. He had, and of course, Giants fans don't want to hear it, but he had kind of almost a one-handed catch across to the other sideline, and that would have gone for a big gain. And so Evan Engram looks really good to me out there, as does, of course, Christian Kirk. Zay Jones has a burst. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens with wide receivers, I think, 4, 5, and 6, how they end up deciding that group of guys. But overall, yes, another good day for Trevor. I guess yesterday wasn't as good. Obviously, we weren't there because we were traveling back. But today looked really, really sharp. I think it's been a great camp for him and developing the rapport with those new guys especially.
I've been very high on the Evan Engram signing since they made it in Doug Peterson's offense. I think that could be a diamond in the rough. Plus, it's a one-year prove-it deal, if you will, for Evan Engram. So I like everything about that. Lauren, my one concern, I heard what Press Taylor said today about they're still talking if they're going to play Trevor on Friday night. Look, you have three preseason games. You got Friday night, you got next week against Pittsburgh, and you got Atlanta, and they'll have dual practices or joint practices with Atlanta leading into that game. This isn't Joe Montana, all right? This isn't Tom Brady or Peyton Manning. This is a guy that threw 12 touchdowns and 17 picks last year. He's never played a football game with Christian Kirk, with Zay Jones, with Evan Engram. He's never played an NFL game with Travis Etienne. You got to be careful to me about being too careful with these guys. I know the injury concerns and all that, but you can't send them out there to me cold turkey against Washington on opening day, never have played a live rep before in a game where the defense is actually trying to stop you.
See, I go the other way. To me, college football doesn't have a preseason, and we see Alabama roll out every year and look fantastic in week one, or albeit Georgia last year against Clemson week one. I don't think there should be an NFL preseason. I absolutely hate it, because you are going to have guys that are trying to make a roster going 1,000 miles an hour, and one of your guys is going to end up hurt. And, you know, we saw it with Marquise Lee, certainly against the Falcons. And so I absolutely hate preseason. I wish no starter played at all. Only the guys that you're trying to figure out whether or not they're going to make the roster. I understand your point, certainly, that you can't just roll out September 11th and not have against the Commanders and not have had those tackling experiences and things like that. But that's why they did it yesterday, because we saw Thursday night. Obviously, a lot of guys didn't play. 21 guys didn't play. But also, it really was not the same speed of an actual NFL game. And I don't think Friday night will be either, or next Saturday, or what have you. So for me, I am fine if they bubble wrap them, and just in practice when they have it controlled, when they do the live tackling.
Lauren Brooks of the Franchi Show. Lauren, I guess there was certainly a tense moment last Thursday with Tyson Campbell. He appears to be fine, but there was kind of a hold your breath moment there. Well, apparently there was a hold your breath moment or two today involving one of them was Christian Kirk, but by all indications, he's also fine.
He's totally fine. Hayes Carlin talked to him after practice, and I know people listened to that earlier today on the Franchi Show, that one-on-one with Hayes, who does a great job catching up with the key players post-practice. And so, yes, Christian was fine. Alex Brooks of Jaguars PR announced to everybody right before Trevor spoke that it was just a rolled ankle. He's all good. And certainly, if he had gotten actually injured, he wouldn't have done any interviews after practice. So he said he feels fine. And like I said, I know people enjoyed that interview earlier today on the Franchi Show.
Lauren, you look at some of the stars of last Thursday's game. Trevon Walker, we've certainly talked a lot about him. I'll tell you, Arden Key's a guy that, look, we you know, the Jaguars sign these six guys on opening day, right? And then you kind of forget that Arden Key wasn't signed until a couple weeks into free agency. 6 sacks last year in San Francisco. He comes in, other than Trevon Walker, was the best player on defense last week for the Jaguars. You wonder, a performance like that, if Arden Key does that again this Friday, Jaguars may have something there.
Well, he's certainly an experienced pass rusher, and I think people kind of forgot about that, and he kind of got lost in the shuffle when it came to this team and this defense because of the scheme. Because he's not technically an outside linebacker, all offseason we've talked about what can Josh Allen paired with Trayvon Walker do, and how much attention will Trayvon get versus Josh, and you know, how many different times will they be double teamed and all that stuff. So I think we've focused so much on that outside linebacker group and position that we kind of forgot about guys like Arden Key or maybe Dwan Snoot. Certainly we've all talked a lot about Caleb Unchason, but those two defensive linemen, I think it's going to be interesting to see. Arden Key said either last week or the week before that he likes rushing the passer from the inside, and so that's why they've got him lined up there. And certainly, like you said, Thursday night, I think a lot of Jaguars fans were going, wait, who's number 49? Oh, that's right. That's Arden Key. We actually do have a good defensive player from LSU on the roster. I had forgotten that that he's here now. And so, look, I think they've got some really good pieces on that defense. I think Mike Caldwell, the defensive coordinator, has almost an embarrassment of riches at the linebacker specifically position. Obviously, the question is moving forward after what we saw with the run defense Thursday night, can this Jaguars team stop the run against real competition? And we certainly won't know that until next month.
Lauren Brooks of the Franzi Show. All right, Lauren, we got about 2 minutes to go in our final moments here. Let's talk about your alma mater, the University of Florida. All the preseason,
the unranked University of Florida.
Yeah, look, at all the preseason magazines, what, they're third or fourth in the SEC East. You and I have talked. You know I have really, really grave concerns about their defense, particularly their ability to stop the run. I think they got some depth issues. You, though, you think Anthony Richardson and that offense, despite the defense's shortcomings, you think they could do something in 2022, correct?
I think they could, and that's based off of, and this is a small sample size, certainly, but going to the spring game at Ben Hill Griffin Stadium, Steve Spurrier Field, man, if Anthony Richardson can look the way he did that night, then I think Florida's offense is going to be good. And here's why, because all of a sudden we saw a guy that became a pocket passer. If he is not forced to use his legs, and I hope, or I know that's what he's worked on all offseason with our buddy Denny Thompson, owner of Six Points. If he can be a good pocket passer and reduce the risk of injury, then holy cow, I think Florida can be good. I like their backfield and what they've got, especially with Montrell Johnson and Naquan Wright. And then the receivers, we'll see, but I like, you know, what we've got in Ricky Pearsall, the transfer from Arizona State. And I certainly like Trent Whittemore, who I think gets overlooked a lot. Do we have a long way to go before Florida, the unranked team, is beating eighth-ranked Utah? Sure. But I am super encouraged by Billy Napier, what he's done all offseason. And certainly he's been focusing on discipline at practice because Florida was the third most penalized team in the SEC last season. So they've got a lot to clean up. But I really like Billy Napier. And I think this team, I'm not going to say they could be special by any means, but I think they can be better than people thought.
Yeah, hard to believe. We've been so caught up in Tony Boselli and Jaguar training camp. You look on the calendar, 19 days until the first college football Saturday, 26 days until Utah comes to Ben Hill Griffin Stadium. Lauren Brooks, you get her every afternoon on the Franzi Show. You also get her every Tuesday on Helmets and Heels. Lauren, appreciate the time. Thank you very much. We'll do it again soon.
Thank you so much, Hacker. And by the way, I looked up how many days to the Florida season earlier today, and you are correct. It is 26 days. Since I knew I'd be joining you, I knew I needed to know that information. Thanks so much for having me.
And thank you to 1010XL's Lauren Brooks. Of course, you get her every day on the Franzi Show here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. And yeah, it's interesting. Not a lot of preseason hype for the Florida Gators. They could certainly surprise some people. And if they do start out, if they find a way to start out 2-0, if they find a way to get a win over Utah and then find a way to get a win over Kentucky 7 days later, then all of a sudden, a lot of that lack of preseason hype will turn into a ton of regular season hype. That's how vital those first two regular season games are this year for Billy Napier and the Florida Gators at the start of the 2022 season. Well, that'll just about do it on a Monday night edition of Hacker After Dark. Glad to be back in Jacksonville. Had a terrific time up in the state of Ohio to see Tony Boselli go into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but certainly glad to be back home. Thank you to Lauren Brooks for joining us. Also, thank you to Graham Hall of 24/7 Sports for talking a little Florida Gator football with us earlier on in the program, and Mia O'Brien of XL Primetime, who put together just an outstanding recap video of all the festivities in Canton over the weekend. If you missed it, check it out on 1010XL's Twitter page, the 1010XL YouTube channel, among many other 1010XL media outlets. We'll be back tomorrow, our late night show on a Tuesday. Are you kidding me? Denmark and I get after it on Tuesday nights. We'll be with you from 10 o'clock until midnight on Tuesday. We hope you join us tomorrow night. Dylan Denmark was your producer this evening. Dylan, great job as always. I'm the Hacker, Ryan Green. In Jacksonville, thank you for spending part of your Monday night with us here on Hacker After Dark on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. So for all of us at HAD, have an absolutely terrific remainder of your Monday evening, and we will talk to you on a Tuesday tomorrow night beginning at 10 o'clock. Until then, good night, Jacksonville.